four IANA specialists that process all the requests that come in. They handle the protocol parameter requests, the numbers requests from the regional internet registries, as well as the root zone change requests. Andreas and Punky have joined us just recently. They're our cryptographic key managers. They work very closely with Kim on the DNSSEC for the root, so they take care of all the key signing ceremonies and things like that, and you'll learn more about that as we get further into the presentation. And Marilia has just joined us recently. She's our manager of business excellence. We have had an EFQM, quality management program, for the last 5 years, and Marilia is taking on that responsibility for continuous improvement within our department. So just a little history, and basically I think everyone's heard all week that ICANN was established in 1998 to be the steward and operator of the IANA functions. And basically we have a contract with the Department of Commerce, and our responsibility is to maintain the registries, the lists of the unique identifiers for the internet, and those unique identifiers have been defined by the IETF. And so we collaborate and cooperate and coordinate with the different communities that in the distributed system, such as the regional internet registries, the IETF, the CCNSO, and the GNSO. And these are authoritative registries that are used by vendors, service providers, business applications developers, and others. Without the maintenance of an authoritative registry, there would be less interoperability. So if I were to be designing a new piece of hardware that I wanted to connect to the internet, I'd need to look at the protocol parameters registries. If I wanted to be able to have my router communicate to another router, I would have to make sure that I worked through the regional internet registries and got an address that could communicate and would be unique. So that's the job we have, is to maintain these registries. So the three primary functions that we have, as I mentioned earlier, are the protocol parameters and the registries that support those, the number resources, and the domain names, which is really the root zone change requests. We're going to talk about those one by one. For the protocol parameters, I'm going to pass along the microphone to my colleague, Kim Davies, and he will introduce you to what we do with them.
Good morning, everyone. As Elise mentioned, we tend to divide what we do into three separate areas: protocol parameters, number resources, and domain names. But really, at its heart, everything IANA does is about protocol parameters. The domain names and number resources, as you'll find out later in the presentation, are just highly specialized forms of protocol parameters. Now, underlying the internet are really hundreds and thousands of different protocol parameters. They're hidden identifiers that you wouldn't perhaps know are essential to the functioning of the internet. Generally speaking, the vast majority of these are only known to software implementers. As an end user of products, you wouldn't necessarily know that they're there. They're not part of the user experience. But nonetheless, coordinating these protocol parameters is essential, as Elise just mentioned, to interoperability of the internet. So just a sense of some of the identifiers that are listed in the protocol parameter registries. We talk about IP, internet protocol. There's things like header flags, port numbers, type of service values. When we send emails, the encoding of those emails is encoded in something called a MIME or a media type. So you have various different encodings of emails that need to be defined in some fashion so that when an email is transmitted from one device to another, there's a common understanding about what encoding that email is in and so on. So there really are hundreds of these registries, but I think protocol parameter registries in particular are notable for the fact that as an end user, you probably are not aware of most of them. There is an index of the registries at iana.org/protocols. and you can find a comprehensive list of them there. This is just a very small sampling of them. So where do these protocol parameter registries come from? Well, the preeminent place where internet standards are developed is the Internet Engineering Task Force, or IETF. In the IETF, when someone wants to develop a new internet protocol, they develop a document called an internet draft. This is a document that's circulated for discussion among the engineering community. Once that document is finalized, it's published as what's called a request for comment or an RFC. Despite the name, an RFC is the finalized version of a particular document that's being developed. Now, many of those RFCs, when they require a registry, a protocol parameter registry, to be devised, will contain specific guidance to the IANA department on how to do that. There'll be a section called IANA Considerations. And in that IANA Considerations section, it will tell the IANA what registries are required to support operation of this protocol, what the registration policy should be, i.e. what are the rules IANA should follow in allowing new entries to be added to the registry, and then what the initial registration and reserve values are for that registry. So how do we interact with that RFC document process? It starts before the RFC is even issued. We're involved in a review process as the documents are finalized. And then after the RFC is published, we then have an enduring obligation to implement and maintain those instructions that are inside the RFC. So let's drill down into that a little bit. Here is an actual cut and paste from a internet draft. This is the kind of instructions that we receive from the IETF in their standards documents. So as you can see, it explains we need to create a registry. It tells us how that registry needs to be devised, what it should be called. It tells you that, for example, registrations should be allocated on a first-come, first-served basis. Registration requests must include a key. I mean, there's various different specific aspects of this registry that IANA is required to follow. Now, every registry has different requirements, and there's thousands of different RFCs. So for each different unique purpose, there's a different set of rules on how the allocations are made. These are documented inside the RFCs. So what happens is when a document is just prior to being published, the RFC editor contacts IANA, the IANA department, asks us to review it. We make sure that we understand the instructions clearly. If there's a lack of clarity, we go back, we speak to the authors of the document, we make sure there's a common understanding so when the RFC is published, IANA can accurately implement the wishes of the authors and what they're trying to accomplish in the standard. So an RFC is completed, it's approved, we now have a new internet protocol or a new standard. IANA department then creates the new registries required by the document, or some standards augment existing registries. So we would then update the existing registries to match with what the document requires. We then maintain on an ongoing basis this registry. We accept registration requests. Some kinds of registries allow anyone off the street to come to IANA directly and ask us for a new allocation to be made in that registry. If that's allowed per the registry's rules, then we maintain that process. Alternatively, other registries require some formal standards mechanism for future updates. So following the rules of the registry, the registration policy, we maintain and update the registry moving forward. So if you go to that website I mentioned a few slides ago, you'll find there's actually over 2,800 different registries we maintain. Again, 2,700 or more of these you've probably never heard of. That's the nature of the business. I mean, a lot of them are very esoteric protocols, but some are critical. Again, the common element is, generally speaking, these protocol registries are behind the scenes. When you interact with a web browser, with email and so on, you don't see these numbers directly, but they are crucial to interoperability of the internet. So how do we process these? Well, firstly, we receive a request. We identify what is actually being asked of. We look at the registration policy. We look at what are the rules governing the type of parameter that's being requested. I mentioned earlier that the defining RFC determines what that policy is. We then process and evaluate following that policy. A lot of our registries are highly specialized. So we will often go to a designated expert on that particular topic that can help us out in evaluating such a request. I know I can see at least one in the room that is involved in that process with his hand up. So, you know, IANA doesn't profess to be a technical expert on every single one of these registries. When there's a highly specialized evaluation that needs to happen, we rely on the experts in the community to help us in that assessment. If there's more information needed, we go back to the requester. But once that processing evaluation is completed, we then make the updates to the registry and then notify the requester that the request has been complete. So just as an example, how does a request for a new media type work? So let's assume that you're a software implementer. You've invented a new file format. You know, your new technology has a new way of storing data. It's a file, it's a new extension, let's say. How do you make sure that when that's transmitted over the internet, it's understood correctly as a file attachment, in a web browser, and so on? What you need to do is you need to come to IANA and apply for a new media type. So we receive such requests on a form. The form has a number of questions. We review the request. We make sure all the fields have been completed. We send it to a technical expert designated for media type registrations, make sure they find that the request is acceptable. We add the media type to the registry. We confirm with the requester, process complete. So generally speaking, that's kind of the workflow in most cases, that we receive an application, we assess it against the criteria, consult with experts if needed, complete the request, update the public registry. Everything we do is public, so everyone can now look at this list and see that that new file type has been issued. Here is the media type that can be implemented in software. So how many of these do we do? We do around 4,000 of these requests per year. Generally, it's pretty stable. Most of these requests are from the implementer community. They're not from end users. They're from people implementing software, software developers, and so on. How do we do this in terms of performance? Well, in the beginning, I mentioned the genesis of all these registries is essentially the IETF community. So the performance standards on how IANA should operate, how quickly we should operate, are defined in conjunction with the IETF. There's a memorandum of understanding between ICANN and the IETF in terms of what the performance metric should be for doing these protocol assignments and how that should be monitored. So beginning in 2007, we started reporting on service level agreement deliverables on a monthly basis. And then as an annual process, ICANN meets with IETF leadership to review the SLA from the previous year, make any amendments that are necessary to govern the next year's operations. So you can see at the bottom, this is the full SLA tally for the last calendar year. We met all of our SLAs for 2014. As you can see, in terms of the KPIs, we met them between 98 and 100% of the time, month in, month out. So with that, I'm going to hand back to Elise, who will tackle the second section, which is number resources.
Thank you, Kim. I did just want to mention at the end of the protocol parameters piece that those are the largest numbers of requests we receive. They're probably the least understood or known by the general community, but most of our work is done with protocol parameters. Those are the largest number of requests that we receive and process. So back to numbers, and just a little graphic to show the three numbers that are highlighted in yellow, the three types, I guess, of categories: IPv4 addresses, IPv6 addresses, and AS numbers. AS stands for Autonomous System. Those are the numbers that we allocate based on global policies from the regional internet registries. So all of these allocations that are done of the numbers IPv4, IPv6, and autonomous system numbers have deterministic formulas that determine, that's why it's called deterministic, how they are allocated from the IANA department at ICANN to a regional registry. So the IPv4 addresses are allocated based on a schedule now. As you've probably heard, it's been in the news for years and years that, you know, we're running out of IPv4 addresses. Well, ICANN ran out of them in 2011, so we allocated the last big block of IPv4 addresses to all the regional internet registries in 2011. All we have now are little bits and pieces that have been returned, which we hold on to, and there is a deterministic formula which takes care of how those are allocated. So we don't really get requests for IPv4 addresses. All those requests go to the regional internet registries. IPv6 and AS numbers are allocated on receipt of a request from a regional internet registry. We deal only with the regional internet registries. End users are referred to their local region. So for instance, if someone from Singapore were to ask us for an IPv6 address, we would refer them to the APNIC, which is the regional internet registry for this region. So just to reiterate, for the allocation types, for IPv6 and autonomous system numbers, basically there's a formula that allows someone to generate a request from the regional internet registry to us. So if you are within Singapore, say, and you're building a network and you want an autonomous system number, which is necessary for your network to talk to another network, you would go to APNIC and they would have a formula that would say, okay, you can get this autonomous system number. If the APNIC had run out of autonomous system numbers, they'd had a pool at some point in time, and now they're down to just a percentage of that pool, then they could come back to us at the IANA department and say, I've met the criteria, the pool of autonomous system numbers that I have now is below the formula, can I have more autonomous system numbers to serve my region? So that's how IPv6 and autonomous system numbers work with the formulas and the requests. As I mentioned in the previous slide, for IPv4, we really don't have a huge pool at the IANA department of IPv4 anymore, just bits and pieces. And so there's a schedule and a formula that was created by the regional internet registries, and it became a global policy, and so that's how those allocations are done. And then there are some special numbers, because most people don't know about them, just as they don't really know much about the protocol parameters, that are done by the IETF. And these are special number allocations for research and multicast and some other types of special allocations. Those are defined within the IETF protocol specs, the RFCs, and we have a pool that have been allocated and reserved for use by the IETF. So they do not go into the general population. So just to walk through the steps of how we do this, first of all, we being the IANA department, will receive a request from a regional internet registry. That's what an RIR is, a regional internet registry. We have to look and see if they qualify. So if they do qualify, this is an IPv6 address request. If they have less than a half of their /12, and a /12 is an enormous amount of numbers. I think we handed out /12s to each of the RIRs 6 years ago, and no one has yet come back for any more IPv6. And so this is the criteria on which they can send a request to the IANA. And then when they send that request, as you can see, there's a formula that determines what they get. So we use the data from the RIRs as to how many addresses they've assigned or allocated out of their /12s and what's available. And this is an example from the RIPE NCC IPv6 pool. RIPE is the regional internet registry for the European region. And I see that people are starting to peel off and leave this presentation, so I guess it is less interesting than I thought. I'm sorry, I didn't mean, I was hoping you were out the door before I said that. Okay, so this is an example of what the table looks like that we maintain. So basically, it says, you know, what the prefix is for an IPv6 address. No one knows how to read these and say them in real English, so it's not like IPv4 where you just can say, you know, 122.1.1.1. They're more difficult to say. Then it says who is holding that address block, the date it was assigned, and the status. This is pretty much the type of table that's maintained. So we communicate the allocation to the regional internet registry, and once they receive it, they communicate it to their operations community in their own region. And back to the IPv4, what happens there? So based on the formula, there's two allocations of what's called the returned IPv4 pool. That means addresses that were returned and are no longer used by whoever had them originally. And so we have a formula, which if you have really, really good eyesight, you can read. It's on the slide. And it's posted online, so you can also download it, and you can run a prototype against the pool to see what the next allocation will look like if we don't receive any more returned addresses. And this formula runs against the returned pool of IPv4 addresses twice a year, once on March 1st, and once on September 1st. So it's not a request that comes in to the IANA department, and the IANA specialists don't have to process it. Basically, the formula runs, it's on a schedule, and as long as there are addresses in the returned pool, we continue to run the formula against that pool. And then we communicate the results through the registry that we maintain and to the regional internet registries who received the addresses. People get all excited about internet addresses, and basically, as you can see over the last 4 years, these are the number of allocations that the IANA department has made to the regional internet registries. Obviously, a lot of this has to do with the depletion of IPv4 addresses and the fact that IPv6 is such a huge space that the regional internet registries have not yet had to generate any new requests for IPv6 addresses. So as Kim mentioned with the protocol parameters, we do have some performance targets and KPIs. As you can see, we have all these green checks. You may not be able to read it, but it's online at iana.org/performance. And we post these monthly. However, it's a lot easier to get a green check when you don't have any requests. So basically, everything we've processed, the 5 requests we've processed in the last year, we processed within the SLA. But I'm still proud to say that we processed everything within the SLA, even though there were only 5 requests. And my colleagues over here are laughing at me from the regional internet registries. But we work very closely with them on the establishment of the global policies that come through the regional internet registries and make sure that we implement, for instance, that IPv4 formula for the returned pool as they had intended it to be implemented. So that's all I have to say about the allocations and assignment of IPv4, IPv6, and the autonomous system numbers and the registries that we maintain on behalf of the community. I will now pass it back to Kim Davies, who will talk about domain names and root zone changes.
Thanks, Elise. I think it's no surprise, looking at the agenda of an ICANN meeting, that this is perhaps the most interesting part of what IANA does. So I mentioned earlier that we have all these protocol parameters that are dished out based on standards developed at the IETF. Before I go further, it's worth noting that the domain name system itself relies upon a number of different protocol parameters you might not have heard of. There's things called record types, DNS security algorithm types, DNS header flags. Again, for the DNS to interoperate, these need to be assigned in a cohesive global way. Again, like I mentioned earlier, these are allocated to software implementers directly. It's not something end users come to us to request. But nonetheless, that is a fragment of what we do for the domain name system managed under the IETF processes and IETF rules that are developed there. But when we talk about the domain names at IANA, typically what we're referring to is not those components, but the namespace, the domain names themselves, the TLDs, the second level domains, and so on. So that's one aspect of the unique identifier space that's used for the domain name system and what we typically refer to as domain names. So this is probably not a surprise to many, but the domain name space is a hierarchical system. You can think of it as a tree. The top of the tree is something called the root of the domain name space. Underneath the root is top-level domains. Under those top-level domains are second-level domains, third-level domains, and so on. This is a unique property of both number resources and domain names. Number resources similarly have a sort of a root, the IANA root. They're divided into chunks. They're divided into smaller chunks. The domain name space works in a similar way. So, actually, I'll skip back. So the key point of this slide is actually that the root is the primary responsibility of the IANA in the context of the domain name system. Maintaining the root implies maintaining delegations of top-level domains. We maintain the database, the official record of which top-level domains exist, who they're operated by, and so on. And I'll drill down into how that works moving forward. So why would someone come to IANA to make a change to the root? Well, generally speaking, an event happens that triggers a request. So firstly, there's a change in a TLD operator. This can be the creation of a new TLD, so you're going from no operator at all to a new operator, or it's taking an existing top-level domain and needs to be transferred to another entity. Another kind of change that triggers a change to the root is just routine maintenance. Maybe it's a technical update. The technical infrastructure for a particular TLD needs to be changed to support new servers or a new environment. Or maybe it's a staffing change. Maybe the people that work at the TLD operator have changed, and our contact point needs to be updated with that TLD operator. Another scenario, less regularly, thankfully, maybe there's a natural disaster. We have these country code top-level domains based in every country of the world. Countries, sometimes they have a hurricane that knocks significant local infrastructure offline, earthquakes, that kind of thing. Often that will necessitate some kind of emergency change request for the TLD. So this is the actual information that IANA maintains on a top-level domain, on a TLD. We maintain the record of who the recognized company or organization is that operates the TLD, its formal legal name, its physical address. We maintain two contacts, an administrative contact and a technical contact. These contact persons, we maintain their name, job title, company address, phone, fax, email. We maintain the technical configuration. This is the data that enables the TLD to actually function. It's a list of the name servers that run that TLD, it's the IP addresses of those name servers, and it's the DNSSEC records that support security for that domain. And then we also list some additional information, some metadata. It's not critical to the operation of the root zone, but it's nonetheless very useful for the community. Things like, what's the web address for that particular registry? Where is their Whois service located? And so on and so on. So taking that from the abstract to the actual, this is an actual cut and paste of the data that we maintain for .hamburg, just as an illustrative example. So again, contact persons for that domain. This is all public information.